First question is, why is finding and buying individual health insurance so confusing and frustrating?
Well, I think that one of the main reasons is after the Affordable Care Act was incorporated, and so many companies had to decide whether or not they actually wanted to participate in it. So what you had was companies coming in, companies going out. A lot of times people don't know what to look for when they're trying to decide what companies. When this first started in 2014, we probably had about five companies offering coverage here in our area. Now we're down to one.
Have you seen changes as far as what people call the gig economy, and people being more self-employed? Have you seen changes as far as your clientele and how their insurance needs?
Sure, you're seeing more people who are self-employed, and that's one of the problems that happens. A lot of times people don't know what to look for. Incomes are hard when you're self-employed. Incomes are hard to gauge exactly what you're going to be making. And one of the things about healthcare.gov and the new Affordable Care Act, they look at your tax forms, they look at what you have reported in the past, they look at what you're trying to estimate for the next year that you're buying coverage for. And a lot of times when you're self-employed, you just don't know what you're going to be making the next year.
So open enrollment just started. In the simplest terms, what exactly does that mean?
Open enrollment is the time that you can purchase health insurance, and that's from 1 November through 15 December. And that was a compromise between the insurance companies and the federal government once they put the Affordable Care Act in place, to ensure that people did not wait until they were chronically sick to buy health insurance. Because now health insurance companies are required to accept anybody who applies. There's no pre-existing conditions held against them, and there's no any additional premium for someone who has an illness. So for say someone who runs 26 miles in a marathon and another person who needs a heart transplant, there's not going to be any difference in their premium at all. The only thing they can charge you extra for is if you're a cigarette smoker.
How is that proven?
It's not proven. And that's one of the things about it. It's a question, and you're attesting to the fact that no, I do not smoke.
Me
It's
either.
just a simple question.
What are some of the concerns and questions you hear people that come into your office have about health insurance?
Well, one of the things we see more often than anything else is that the fact that people just don't know how to navigate through. What's a co-insurance? What's a deductible? What's the copay? Does my doctor take the plan? Is my drug covered? Those are the type of things you see most often. And then also coming up with the right type of premium. What information do you need to get me the correct premium? Now, the government has an 800 number that you can call. But unfortunately, it's a call center, and all they do is take the information, put it into the computer, and then it comes up with an eligibility letter. Now, here in our office, we use the same system that they're using, so we're able to answer your questions, get more in, I would say, get deeper into the questions to come up with what the answers need to be to match up with what you're trying to do in the long run. One of the requirements is that if you're married, you're supposed to file a joint tax return. You'd be surprised the number of people who are married who don't file a joint tax return, and that's held against them.
What all changes have we seen nationally under President Trump?
Well, as of now, the one thing that's the most prevalent thing has been the extension of the short-term health care plans. One of the things that they had was that we call them limited benefit plans. And sometimes that catches people off guard, because they can hold pre-existing conditions against you. You don't qualify any tax subsidies to help pay your premiums. And a lot of times when you look at, there is a max. While under the Affordable Care Act, companies are required to offer certain preventive services. But under the short-term plans, they're not required to offer those plans.
Yeah, and he also got rid of the individual mandate,
That's
which, if I'm not
correct.
mistaken, that was younger, healthier people paying into a system to offset older, more expensive
That is
plans.
exactly right. One of the things about the mandate, it would ensure that people who probably wouldn't use the insurance as much would be a part of the paying public, versus those who need it every day, and that's how they could offset some of those costs. Because now insurance companies, when they basically enroll someone, there's no limit as to what they can pay on a person. There's no pre-existing conditions, so if you get the coverage today, you enroll January 1st, your coverage starts, and you, if you need a new heart, and there's a heart available, I always use that one because normally that's going to be the most. Or if you even suffer from cancer, right away they have to start treating you. It's January 1st, you can go and you can get your drugs, your prescriptions. You can also make sure that you're able to go to the doctors that you need to see. And a lot of times, a lot of people don't realize that. So when you don't have the young people, per se, or even healthy persons being a part of that system, it can become more expensive for insurance companies because there's actually no dollar limit on how much they can or they're required to pay for a person.
The other, okay, what in Georgia, what changes have we seen with Governor Kemp? Or what changes might be coming?
Well, as of right now, there's been no changes. Of course, we hear talk of Medicaid expansion. And because of the how that works is, the federal government uses their what they call a federal poverty level to determine what type of subsidy you can be eligible for. And so we understand if you're working and you're making money, there's always the complaint that I don't qualify for a subsidy. But it also works on the other side. So if a person makes a certain amount, but it's actually below the federal poverty level, they don't qualify for any help from the government either. And so what happens is you can have a person out there who works every day, and depending on how many people in their family, if they're a dollar below the federal poverty level, then they get no help from the government
below
to help
the,
pay.
Below the
That is absolutely right.
Which is a lot of Southwest Georgia from here to the Florida line, which is
that's correct.
People are concerned about
that's correct
health access.
And I always use the example of a single mother who might be working, and while her child can get Medicaid, if the child is under age 19, but that mother is, let's say she's making $16,900 a year. Well, if she's not making $16,910 a year, she might not get any help at all. And that's what, when the law was originally written, those people would be able to qualify for Medicaid. Now, in turn, when the Supreme Court ruled that the Affordable Care Act was actually legal, one of the things it did also specify was that Medicaid was a state's rights issue. So it was up to the individual states to determine whether or not they would expand Medicaid. So you would find in most of your blue states, there is Medicaid expansion. Where there's a Republican governor, I think there's maybe one or two states where, but none in the South, where you have Republican governors. Kasich in Ohio did expand the Medicaid.
The South, which is like most of the people below the poverty line.
Unfortunately, that works that way. Then you also, now you asked the question as to dealing with what's
Kemp is
looking to do. Well, he is saying, looking at maybe a possibility, they have applied, they're going to apply to the federal government for a waiver to ask the federal government, because Medicaid is actually, a lot of the money comes from the federal government. And it's basically telling people, we're going to let you, in the form of, let's say, a block grant to the state, determine how you're going to take this money and give it out. So one of the things is, was basically released last, maybe like 2 weeks ago. They basically said, maybe there's a possibility, and it won't be happening in 2020, be maybe most likely in 2021, that the some sort of expansion will come, which will require those who fall below, who qualify for the expansion, to either be working, seeking work, going to school, or volunteering. Of course, the fine print is still has to be worked out. That's one of the things about that.
Do you think, politics aside, do you think that what these call single payer Medicare for all is feasible?
No, I do not. I think that for some it might be. I think that if it was an option, then I think it would force insurance companies to then have more competition. And I think for most of us, we know that if you have competition, then people start to look at what how much I want to charge you for something. So I do think it needs to be an option for a person to go into a Medicare-type product, because I do sell Medicare-type products. Now, right now, we're in the middle of open enrollment for Medicare Advantage plans, and that's probably what most people would be going into if you moved into it, because what that does is while your money goes to the federal government then sends your money to a private insurer who actually administers the insurance costs. And that catches a lot of people off guard. So you have to, with that, you have to make sure your doctors take it. You have to make sure your drugs are covered. So you're right back in the same boat. And there's going to be a fee for it. But that catches a lot of people who qualify for Medicare, which is mostly those over age 65. Once you become age 65, you qualify for Medicare. And they look up and they're like, okay, so you're going to take it was $135, but it will be now $144. And you're telling me Medicare is only going to pay 80% of what they authorize. So if you have a product like that.
Yeah, I've heard of that Medicare Advantage is necessary.
That's correct. To pick up where Medicare picks off, drops off, I should say. And it just becomes a hassle. I think that it can work for those who have the ability to, I should say, decipher through all of it. I think for a healthy person, it might work. I think, but for a lot of people, we see a lot of problems now just with that person who turned 65 trying to determine which Medicare Advantage plan do I go to. And that's because they're using private insurers to do the job of the federal government. So now the other thing is also what's going to happen to all those people in healthcare. Field who work in the healthcare field, because it's anticipated that probably up to 2 million jobs will be lost with a Medicare for All plan.
Wow.
That's a lot of
jobs.
I think that's a component that will probably be looked at more deeply, but I just think that if anything, it needs to be an option. I think people, and there's some people who really like their private insurance. They like the idea that I can choose what doctor I want to go to. Now, of course, that's not the case here because we only have one carrier.
So you talk about the future. Would you have any forecast for this market, the health insurance market, that's going next 5 to 10 years?
No, I will tell you, because right now we're in the middle of the courts deciding. The appeals court a district court judge just ruled that he thought that the whole law should be tossed out. And the reason why he said that, because the individual mandate has been now put aside, so you don't get penalized. So healthy people are not being forced to join the plans if they don't want to. So right now, the appellate court is listening to that argument. They will probably rule, and then the Supreme Court, because it's going to be then appealed, whichever side comes out is going to be appealed, and then it will go to the Supreme Court. And we know now, after the new seating of the Supreme Court justices, we just don't know what's going to happen. So right now we're going to get through 2020, and hopefully we'll find out in November what 2021.
I thought you said that, yeah, nothing's going to happen until 2021. I'm like, yeah, of course, after the election.
That's correct. Yeah, that's going to be a big thing.
It's interesting all the stuff that you're saying. We're going to switch gears now and go to more get-to-know-you quick questions. But I will say, off the subject, when everybody was criticizing Obamacare as being socialist, I'm like, actually, it's fascist. But, okay, Mr. Carl Brown, age?
Yes, I'm 60.
Hometown?
Brooklyn, New York.
The best lesson the Army gives for a businessman?
That you have to get up every day and go to work.
Favorite meal?
That's a tough one.
Favorite concert you ever been to?
My favorite concert I've ever been to in my life, believe it or not, was Elton John.
Cool. Favorite book?
The Spook Who Sat by the Door.
Favorite meal?
My favorite meal, I would probably say, I don't know, I'm a vegetable type of person, meat and potatoes, although I don't eat a lot of meat anymore. So I would say I'm definitely vegetables. You give me some beans and some rice or something like that. I'm pretty happy.
Swashy flay down.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm good with that. Pretty simple with the meals.
Do you have a favorite restaurant in town?
Yes, I go to Country Life.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a regular at Country Life.
Do you know Brian Senior?
Brian Senior.
He works at CSU. His dad's name is Horace. He goes there all the time.
I probably have seen him.
I graduated from high school with him.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is calling the Affordable Care Act Obamacare racist?
No, because I think that one of the things is I think that President Obama, he adopted that name. I think that's where it really came from. He was like, yeah. So now you can call it Trump Care.
That's a wrap.
That's great. That's hilarious.